Take five. Five questions to authors and artists. With a common question, we get a personal perspective on what shapes their views. Take five with Peter James. So, Peter, welcome to Audiobook Radio.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to ask you, what was the book that really inspired you to write?
It was Graham Greene's Brighton Rock. When I was 14, growing up in Brighton, and I'd always been a fan of detective fiction. I read Agatha Christie, Conan Doyle, Dorothy L. Sayers. But with all of those books, it was kind of a very similar kind of pattern. Yeah? It seemed to me there was a tradition in English detective novel that you have a murder in chapter one, usually in a library of a country house, and the rest of the book is a puzzle to solve it. And suddenly with Brighton Rock, we have a novel where the villains are the central characters. Pinky, 17-year-old murderer, who's a devout Catholic, who's consumed by fear of eternal damnation. And the central characters were the villains. And the murder didn't happen until somewhere in the book. I mean, it's got one of the best opening lines ever written, I think. Within 3 hours of arriving in Brighton, Hale knew they meant to murder him. You kind of have
You're
to
intrigued.
Read on. And the book captured the kind of dark underbelly of Brighton, which is where I was living as a teenager there. And I put that book down at the end, and it's got a stunning last line to you. I mean, just psychologically dark. And when I put that book down, I said, one day I want to write a novel set in Brighton that's 10% as good as this book. And that was the kind of, and I always wanted to write a crime novel set in Brighton from that point.
Incidentally, just an aside, because I know that you are a film producer and are still actively involved in films and particularly with your own work. What did you think about the two renditions? Have you seen both movies?
I think the first original with Richard Attenborough is one of the most faithful and brilliant adaptations of a novel ever filmed. I think mostly film adaptations of novels are a complete waste of time because they never ever capture it. That first one, I think it's the best role Richard Attenborough ever played in his whole career. Mm. The second one I thought was a complete and utter abortion. For a start, they filmed in Eastbourne, not Brighton.
What was that about?
Yeah, what was about moving into the Mods and Rocker area? I mean, they have Pinky driving around a motor scooter. Hello, a teenage murderer is not going to be riding a motor scooter. He might sit in the back of a chauffeur-driven limo. But it was pathetic. I thought the whole film, I thought Helen Mirren was great.
As she always is.
As she always is. And could I have 95 minutes of my life back, please, watching it?
Okay, moving swiftly on. I was wondering if you could tell us what book you would really like to have written. Would it have been that one?
Graham Greene's Brighton Rock, yeah.
Right.
If I could have written any book in history, it's that book.
Mm-hmm. And have you followed, I mean, did you then consume all of Graham Greene's books as a result?
Yeah, I've read pretty much everything he ever wrote. And I still think today he's actually very modern. I mean, he wrote his next favourite book, which I love, is The Human Factor, which is actually, you know, realised part of the way through it. It's about a spy. Where I've learned the most from Graham Greene is, funny enough, is actually character. I think, particularly his male characters, I mean, every budding writer should read Greene, because within two or three lines, he makes you feel you've known a character all your life. And he doesn't do it by saying the guy had blue eyes and a hooked nose and... what he does is, for instance, in The Human Factor, the first one, he said, I can't remember the guy's name, I think it was Smith. Smith was the man who always got things wrong. When he was in London, he always looked like he was dressed for the country. And when he was in the country, he always looked like he was dressed for London.
Mm.
And you kind of...
Speaks volumes.
You get a sense of him almost.
Yeah. It's always wonderful when writers have that economy and can really get it going. What about, is there a book, it might be the same one, that you would like to have read to you?
Book I'd like to have read to me? God, there's quite a few. I mean, books that I've really loved over the years. I mean, I think that In terms of crime books, I used to love Ed McBain's Laws of the Con Man. Was probably the first book after Graham Greene that I read that liberated me from this whole tyranny of the body in the library in chapter one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, set in the New York precinct, you know, real great thrillers. I love Elmore Leonard's. I think you could have anyone read almost any Elmore Leonard to me, and I'd be very mm-hmm. happy. One of my favourite novels, which is actually not a crime novel, was Kurt Vonnegut Jr.'s Slaughterhouse-Five, which I put that in my top 10 of all time great, mm-hmm. great books.
So, just slightly following on from that, if there was no printed word, would you be a storyteller?
Yeah. This gets into a terrain that I'm really interested in, because everybody's going on right now about the printed novel and this. People forget I actually published the world's first electronic novel in 1994.
Did you really?
Penguin published my book Hosts on 2 floppy disks.
In 1994? That was hugely progressive.
Yeah, and they did it as well as print, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pilloried. I was attacked on the Today programme.
Because?
I was front page headlines in Italy, this man is killing the novel. And my argument then was, it's the same argument now, is hang on a second, guys. What actually is a book? Because writers, when they first started writing, books hadn't been invented. You go back to the early days, it was an oral tradition. The storyteller, trying to make sense of the world we live in, the kind of funny lights in the night sky, talking about the saber-toothed tiger, the spirits. That kind of moved on into playwriting. I mean, Sophocles, as an example, there weren't books in Sophocles' time. If you wanted to communicate as a writer, you either were a poet or a playwright. Shakespeare wrote plays because, again, there were hardly any books around, and even when there were, most people couldn't read them.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until 1880 that books became popular. You know, if Shakespeare was writing today, he'd be a novelist, he'd probably be writing crime novels. Seriously, you know, half his plays have got a courtroom scene.
Mm,
you know, what would King Lear, what would Macbeth be, what would Lear, you know, what would Gilbert Sophocles
be? They're all cracking good stories.
Yeah, good storyteller. Storytelling is storytelling, almost kind of regardless of the format. You know, I think that's why audiobooks work so well, because they actually go back to the roots of storytelling.
Mm.
You know, it's a voice, and I think that voice and the darkness. I love listening to audiobooks, because you almost feel the connection to the author.
Me too, I'm a big fan. Some people say, though, that they need that internal voice which they interpret themselves, and they don't like anyone else's interpretation. So, you know, you rightly said that films don't often work that successfully with books, but do you feel there's a danger with an audiobook, in as much as do you sometimes hear a voice and you're kind of going, you know what, this isn't the voice I want it to tell me this story, and you kind of switch off a chord as a result? Or
I think not. When I'm reading, you know, you imagine the characters and you imagine their voices. I think with an audiobook, if it's a good actor, then normally they're fairly convincing. I've never thought, oh my God, that doesn't sound like I'm thinking the character should sound like. I have had it on my own audiobooks of my own where I thought, that doesn't sound like Norman Potty.
Mm.
Or that doesn't sound like the Graham Branson I've created.
Do your own? Have you ever thought of, you know, sort of slightly dramatising it, so having actors doing the characters, but you actually do the narration?
I have discussed it with my publishers in the past, and part of the problem is, I'm not a professional actor, so you know, all the kind of the range of inflections and things would be difficult. And second, it's time. It does take a chunk of time.
That's very true. There does seem to be, like, I've recently, you know, listened to Ian McEwan doing Solus and Philip Pullman doing The Jesus. You know, there seems to be a few authors.
Do you think it works?
Wonderfully, because there's this sort of, there's the extra bit where they're obviously inside the book, so there's no, you have less questioning in your own mind when you're listening to it, where sometimes you're listening to something and you're kind of going, but, you know, the way he said that, I wonder if he really is that kind of a person. But if Ian McEwan's doing it that way, you know that that's exactly the kind of person he's kind of meant to be.
I shall rethink this.
There's an authenticity, I think, that's...
I'm going to rethink this, because you're absolutely right.
Okay. Well, final question, and I'll take five before you tell us a bit about what you're currently doing. But just, what are you currently reading?
What I'm currently reading is I'm actually writing right now. So when I write, I tend not to read fiction, because it's so easy to pick up somebody else's story. So I'm reading one of my kind of research novels, which is a book called Vernon, Practical Homicide by Vernon Gerberth, his next New York homicide detective. It's a great big term. You don't want to look at it before dinner because it's got really grim pictures. I've just finished a book by, oddly enough, it's that's a couple, Mark Edwards and Louise Voss, the first time authors. They self-published their book on the internet and now HarperCollins has printed it. And it's called Killing Cupid, and it's brilliant. I mean, they asked if I'd have a look at it. I can tell if I'm going to like a book by the end of the first paragraph.
Really?
And this book, and most books, by the end of the first couple of pages, I think, no, this book just gripped me. It's a really good, it's a kind of, it's an obsession, a book about obsession, but it's very, very good.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. Okay, now I know authenticity is hugely important and you do a lot of your own research. Is that kind of for fun, or is it just really important because of the genre that, you know, with D.S. Roy Grace has to be 100% what he's doing has to be so real? Like, I know you spend a day a week still with the Brighton Constabulary. So just could you tell us a little bit about where the research takes you sometimes and whether it is all just like fun? Like, if you have to do research on something that might not be so much fun, do you just get it out of the book?
I'm doing something that's not going to be so much fun this Thursday. I'm spending an 8-hour shift as a bin man in Brighton.
My old man's a dustman.
Yep.
I was just about to launch into the sun.
I'm actually working 8-hour shift as
My gosh.
On the dust cart doing bins, because I've got a scene in the next book I want to understand it. Because I always believe in understanding the culture of anything that I'm writing about. So with the police, and the reason that I go out so much with the police is that A, there's so many different moving parts. B, the police have a culture and they look at the world differently. They do things differently. And they never stand still. They are constantly changing. I mean, the names, the acronyms, the way they operate. They probably change more than any other profession. So I can, in a typical week, do almost anything. I mean, I spent some time for this book out with the celebrity protection team in Los Angeles because of it's about...
Glad.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. Because being the homeless celebrity, they have a lot of, you know, their A-listers with stalkers. And I spent some time with the chief of this department. It's called Chief Moore. And he gave me this great quote. He said, "You know, Peter, some of these A-list folk, these are high-voltage people who create their own weather."
The ultimate. Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful.
I thought it was such a great quote.
Is that quote in the book?
It's somewhere in the book, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about the book. What outing is this for Detective
this
Superintendent
Roy Grace?
Number 8.
Yeah. It's about a big movie that's being shot in Brighton about the love affair between King George IV and his mistress, Maria Fitzherbert. George IV, his royal patronage, really put Brighton on the map. And he had a mistress who he actually did secretly marry, although she was he wasn't allowed to marry her. He did have a wife he married who was desperately ugly. His first sight, when he first saw his wife, he said, "For God's sake," he said to Beau Brummel, who was his best mate, and he said, "For God's sake, man, get me a big brandy." But he had this relationship with Maria Fitzherbert for many years, and in the movie, in my book, she's being played by a character that has kind of been inspired by Madonna. So it's like a rock star turned actress called Gaia. And she's living in LA and she's about to come to England to play the role. And a stalker in Los Angeles tries to kill her. This is right at the beginning of the book. And actually kills one of her assistants in error. And Roy Grace and his team were then told this stalker could strike again in Brighton. You know, it would be a complete disaster for the town if anything happened to Gaia during the filming. What they don't realise is there's actually a second stalker in Brighton.
So the plot thickens.
Yes.
Oh, well, I really look forward to reading that, as
Thank
I'm
you.
Sure many of our listeners will too. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Nice to see you.
Similarly.